What I usually do in all my seminars is I give a test first, but the test is I test if anybody's too advanced for the class, but it's never happened before. But I ask three questions, and if you can answer yes on all the questions, then I would sit in the audience and I would give you the seat. Okay? So the first question is, have you found what you're looking for? In your minds, you can answer. Have you found what you're looking for? Someone may say that they've actually found what they're looking for. You know, it could be the soulmate or whatever. The dream job. Okay, so if you said yes, you still may be qualified to sit here on the seat. Okay? Next question. Is it eternal? Because if you found something that you're looking for, but it's not eternal, then it's going to be full of duality because you're going to lose it. And therefore, the happiness you get from it will also be mixed with a certain distress. But someone may say yes. I mean, not, you know, they say, I found Jesus, I found path, some spiritual path, I found yoga. This yoga means that it's some eternal goal. So you may say yes. The third question is, are you always living in that reality? And generally, people would have to say, no, I haven't achieved that. Because that's actually, this is the yoga of forgiveness. I wanted to explain what yoga means first. That's the goal of yoga. The goal of yoga is to realize the self, which is eternal. And a happy, satisfied state. So what it indicates is the purpose of any of my talks is to connect things with self-realization, to actually understand some kind of eternal goal. And I want to show how forgiveness is actually a very important part of yoga, actually. And when we're talking about yoga, we're talking about the process of coming to that point where you realize yourself. This is a yoga teacher training. It goes beyond asana. Asana is a part of that yoga process. Yoga means, basically this is what yoga means, and I can demonstrate it with my hands. This is the mind. The mind is an instrument through which we perceive the world, and potentially we can perceive ourselves. Yoga means to bring the mind to its original state or its repaired state. And when the mind is, let's say the mind is like a mirror. It's often compared in yoga to a mirror. There's one verse in my tradition about kirtan. Why do you do kirtan? It says, chaito dharpana marjanam. Chaito, the mind, is dharpana. It's like a mirror. And you want to clean the mirror. Why? When you clean the mirror, then you can see through it perfectly. Let's say a mirror, to have perfect perception, has to be, straight, right? It has to be clean. What happens if the mirror is distorted? What happens to your vision? Your vision is distorted. Now, in psychology or spirituality or religion or any process of improving yourself, there's a common understanding that if you have a higher level of perception, you'll have a higher level of contentment, right? Even if you go to a psychologist, he's trying to help you to see the truth, understanding that if you see reality, you won't be in as much fear. So that's the idea.
Yeah.
Now look at the mind here, right? See, yoga means that you, it's a science. There's actually six Indian philosophies that comprise all kinds of a variety of thoughts. There's Nyaya, which is logic, and Vedanta, which is philosophical analysis. There's Visheshika, which is more like science, things like that. But yoga deals with psychology, actually, the science of the mind. So what happens when the mind is distorted? It's called vrittis. Right? What happens when it's distorted? Your perception is distorted. Right? What happens if a woman wants to become a top model and she goes to a mirror that is, I don't know, distorted? Right? But she doesn't realize it. And she sees that she has this huge size and she becomes fearful. What is the problem? The problem is not what she is. The problem is what she's perceiving herself to be. And in yoga, this is what the conception is. We're suffering because the mind is distorted. And therefore, we become in fear. We're not seeing reality, and therefore, we're always in anxiety. And especially, we're not seeing ourselves. Yoga Sutras, I'm not fully aware of what the frame of reference of the audience is. So anytime you want to ask a question, you can. In the Yoga Sutras, it describes ignorance as the cause of suffering. And what's ignorance? Ignorance is when the pure, eternal, and blissful self thinks it's the impure, temporary, and miserable body and mind. Because of the identification you suffer. They give sometimes the example, if you're in India and you go out in the forest, and in the evening you see a rope, but you think it's a snake, then you suffer. What's the problem? It's perception. So you probably all even have that experience of a heightened degree of perception and contentment by even the asana part. But the whole process of yoga is to purify the mind from lower modes, they call them, that distort the mind, of ignorance, which causes inertia, depression, and anxiety, and passion, which causes intense activity and anxiety, and purify the mind, bring it to a higher mode of perception. So in yoga, there's eight practices. They all deal with controlling the mind. The first practice is what? Called yama. And what does yama mean? If you want to control the mind, you first have to control the mind, how you deal with others. Right? So what is the first yama? Ahimsa, nonviolence. If you're violent, and it's even very subtle, because if you have selfish desires, you're going to exploit others to some degree. It's not just knocking people over the head with some iron rod. We all know how we tend to encroach on others because we have our desires and needs. But what Patanjali wrote the Yoga Sutras described, that that's like an elephant's footprint. Within an elephant's footprint, everything else fits. So that's the basis of yoga. You have to start with giving up enmity, really. Because if you can't control the mind and how you deal with others, and how are you going to do niyam? Niyam's how you deal with yourself. Right? And then when you do that, then asana. And what is asana? According to Patanjali, sukha and sthira. Make the body happy and steady. Because if you're trying to control the mind by meditation, and you're kind of going like this, I just I'm moving my shoulders now. when you're going like this, you know, you can't. And then there's pranayama. Then it gets subtle with controlling the breath, very powerful. Then it gets to pratyahara, where you're actually able to extract the mind from the body. Then meditation begins. Dharana, dhyan, samadhi in progressive stages. So I teach, you know, spirituality in general. And I thought, how important is it to actually deal with resentment? Why? Because it's basically one of the hardest forms of enmity to give up, because you think there's a reason or cause. And in one sense, there is on one platform. So I started giving, I give many different types of seminars, but Paula, I gave something last week, so I'm going to give this. Also, there's a little mistake in what I was supposed to speak on, so I'm going to give actually maybe two seminars today. Maybe the first half or two-thirds will be on this subject, and then I'll talk about Indian philosophy and summarize the Bhagavad Gita. Here's a classic quote about how resentment affects consciousness. It says, the shadows of resentment keep our spiritual light from shining through, never allowing us to fully experience who we are. How much does anger and resentment distort our vision? Certainly of ourself as a loving self, which is the nature of the self. It's where the self achieves satisfaction. So I think it's a very, very relevant subject. And I actually wrote an article, I spoke on it about 3 years past here, is there therapy in the Vedas? The Vedas are the original Indian spiritual philosophical text culture. You know, because someone asked me that, is there therapy on the Vedas? And what I saw is there was a description and context of an intact society, you know, where for many reasons it was based on promoting spiritual and mental health. And you can see in the modern world, you know, the families breaking up and all these situations, the impact it has on people's consciousness. So I think sometimes, even I'm teaching yoga philosophy, I have to concentrate sometimes on things that are contemporary to people in their spiritual lives. And I think one is really giving up resentment. But one more point I think I just meditate on. I was reading a book by Eric Fromm, a famous sociologist. He wrote a book called The Art of Loving. And he talked about, it's very interesting, he talked about, you know, when people think of love, they want love. Maybe they're not satisfied, they didn't have their romance, you know, I got stuck in this relationship too early. He said what people think about these days is more getting love than giving love. and you know, he talked about relationships is really something, you know, you work and work at it, and then you get love, not at some fleeting infatuation. It's another point. But I think it's also related to this. You know, when you talk about forgiveness, it's really, yeah, because you're talking about giving. Right? We're generally thinking about getting. You know? But giving. A lecture was very interesting yesterday. I heard a lecture yesterday, and it talked about giving. And the power of giving, and that how it's a contradiction that goes beyond reason, because when you give, you become bigger. Right? When you give, selflessly give, you become bigger. What becomes bigger? You become kinder. You become more exalted. Your compassion develops. Your happiness increases. You see? And when you, and when you're in a consciousness of just taking, right, you become smaller. Right? And no one thinks that, that, you know, Hitler was a big person. He was taking, he was exploiting, and he was becoming smaller in what character. This is really about that. Now, I should also mention that my objectives here are limited. You know, I don't know what kind of issues people have. I'm not a psychologist. There are courses where take people through these issues. But this is basically just giving a philosophical explanation. If you're training to be yoga teachers, you should be able to give these philosophical explanations. If you want to be more realized, and you have a problem, it may inspire you to actually work on this. And it may take more than I can do within the class. So it's a philosophical explanation. But if you want to change yourself in any way, you first have to have the proper understanding. Otherwise, you can say, otherwise you won't move forward. And I think this is very important. So I'm going to deal with the definition. And I think it's really important. And then the first thing is what it is. I'm going to describe what it is. I'm going to describe when it's appropriate. And I'm going to discuss why. And what we're really going to focus on this class is why. Now, what is it? There's a definition of the dictionary: to give up resentment against, to give up the desire to punish, stop being angry, overlook, pardon, etc. Minimum condition is you forswore revenge, you don't wish the person bad, and your resentment is tempered. So that's our basic definition.
Yeah.
You forswore revenge. You don't want to. You don't wish the person ill anymore, deep in your heart, and you temper resentment. And basically, you give up the feelings. It doesn't mean you have to stay in a relationship with someone. Doesn't seem that this has to be your friend. You know. But I'm talking about in terms of consciousness. There's one quote that I read on it that's kind of said, forgiveness is to give up all hope for a better past. It's kind of dropping the issue. You know, and he told me the story. This person helped drive me. He says, I got a story about forgiveness, I'll tell you. You know, and you know, his parents got divorced when he was 22. He became angry with his father, so he wouldn't speak to his father. You know, he felt it was wrong. It could have been wrong. Maybe it probably was wrong. Dharma, commitment. So then he took he began to travel. The young man, he went down to Peru. And then he heard about Katrina. He went to Katrina, and he said, what will I do to help? So he went to the convention center, and he said, should I join the Red Cross? Should I do? He said, I'll go around and talk to people. So he talked, and he met this one black man. He looked a little disheveled, but then when he saw he was quite educated, right? And he became, and the person described that, you know, he was a Vietnam veteran, you know, and he said, you know, I have to go back there because I left my heart there. So you know what he's talking about. And then he looked at him mystically and he said, and you know, you left your heart with your father and you should go and apologize. He says, I didn't, right. Never even like told the guy this. You know, it just came out of the blue. So he was describing to me in the car when we were driving. I came from near Albany. And he was explaining this story, and then what happened was is he just took a car, and he drove up to see his father in Michigan, 30 hours, And his father was on the line. Thank you, Paul. His father was on the front lawn, and he saw him. They embraced, and then it was finished. He dropped it. Right? He dropped it. That's forgiveness. Right? Somehow you drop it. That case, you may have had a relationship. In other cases, it may have been a person that's more dangerous, or, you know, is a little bit. But that's basically what it is. And what that, because I see, I was counseling someone last night, late in the night. There was some person connected with me, and in a difficult situation. I was counseling them, and basically the thing is this enmity, right? This enmity, you know, resentment, how it degrades the mind. And if you want to be enlightened, right? You want to be happy or higher level, how it degrades the mind. So this is what it is. Now, when is it appropriate? Now, I'm not going to absolutely resolve this now, because the objective of my class is to show that forgiveness is dharma, is the right thing, and I hope to expand the situations or conditions where forgiveness is appropriate. I want to expand the conditions by explaining the traditions of knowledge, etc., when it is appropriate. The reason I'm not going to resolve it is because there's very subtle issues that we can get sidetracked with. Like, the story of the Amish? Where you know, somebody came into their schoolhouse, killed six children. You know that story? And they immediately forgave them, right? And so that's unilateral bestowed at the earliest moment, right? I'm not going to push for that. That may be the condition. I'm not sure about it. Because if someone may, and I think it sidetracks someone in the discussion, because someone does someone to someone you love, there may be when it's done to yourself with spiritual traditions, if someone does something to yourself and you understand the law of karma, it could be unilateral bestowed at the earliest moment to elevated souls. That I think we can agree on. I mean, in our tradition, which is based on the main practice is kirtana, chanting mantras. The acharya, the teacher, the exemplar for that, and it's born in a Hindu culture, was a Muslim person who took to this. And the Muslims were running India at that time. So this person was tortured. They set an example of him, and they beat him in 22 marketplaces. And every moment he was forgiving the people. He was even sorry what was going to happen to them. If you understand the law of karma, you can see, I'm going to explain the law of karma to see that. But maybe if someone does something, you know, someone you love, there's, you know, an appropriate period of an expression of your love, you know, where there may be some feeling against the person, you know, a mother and a child. You know, and I think if you force people to confront that, especially in 2 hours, they'll be sidetracked. So let's just say that resentment, what does moral outrage mean? Resentment, there may be some moral outrage for a short period of time or some period of time. What I'm saying, when the conditions are right, it's appropriate, and those conditions are very broad. And I'd like to extend those conditions in this class. Now, resentment means resentir. It means to again feel. Again go and feel those things. So I'm saying there's a time where it becomes morbid, practically no matter what happens. To go all the way back, to revisit. There's a time where it should be given up. And it could be immediately, if you realize it's someone else happened, there could be a period of time. So the real question is why, right? If you understand why you should forgive, you'd be more applicable to extend the conditions when you forgive.
Could you repeat that?
Okay. When you understand why you should forgive, right, that it's the correct thing to do, and you understand the spiritual implications when forgiveness comes in your heart, then you'll be more applicable to extend the conditions when you'll forgive. It may not be, you know, until this person gets on the floor and licks the ground and licks my teeth, you know, and suffers it for 30,000 years, I won't forgive. You know, then when I explain the class, you'll say, okay, only 10,000 years. You know, or, you know, extend it a little bit more. Or I should forgive now. You understand?
Thank you.
And thank you for that question for making... I listed spiritual forgiveness. It's not just a therapeutic matter, as this was just about you. In other words, it's not just therapy. It's going to be good for you. But it's not just forgiving. It is not just, I'm forgiving. I have amnesia now, and I forgot all about the person. It's not just forgiving, but what it is, it says, rather, when the requisite conditions are met, it is what a good person would seek. Because it expresses their ideals. These include spiritual growth and renewal, mutual respectfulness, reconciliation, peace. It's a moral quality. It's good for you. When those conditions are met, it is good for you. Now I'll explain it again from the standpoint of yoga, okay? And you have to see my hands. And you people could not see my hands, but you've probably seen my hands before. So, let's see. Yes, okay. I want to explain to you what Dharma means. It's very essential to understand what Dharma means. There's many, many definitions. Can anyone here give a definition of Dharma? What is Dharma?
I should know this.
Okay. Anybody else? What is Dharma? Duty. It's what you should be doing, right? But what you should be doing depends actually on what you are. There's many levels of Dharma according to, you know, you may have Dharma, you know, according to the occupation you have, your social situation, your Dharma, I'm married, I'm not married, there's different Dharmas, right? But ultimately, Dharma depends on what you are. And what we are is we're spiritual. And we're meant to actually love God. God meaning reality, consciousness, which is inclusive of everything. We're meant to extend our love to the highest degree. We're meant for that. Our souls, spiritual. So Dharma really means to act spiritually. So Dharma, what in India, what Dharma comes to be is that in every moment of your life, you're faced with a myriad of choices. Right? Dharma is the science of what is the appropriate choice. And it's different for different people. Some, it could be universal Dharma. But it's different for different people because you have different natures, different situations, etc. It's a little complex. So a lot of times there's crisis. What is the right thing to do? So in India, they believe that there's a tradition and an understanding that if mentors and saintly people are immersed and learned in the tradition and have applied those principles in their life, then they can take those principles and, according to the particular situation, guide people on the appropriate decision. And when you make the appropriate decision, here again the mind, it will elevate your mind to a higher level of contentment and perception, a higher level of happiness, if you make the appropriate decision. Right? So what I'm saying in this case, why do you do it? Because forgiveness in the appropriate conditions is the correct response. It's the response that will bring you closer to your soul and true being. What? I never said that it would be easy. But I'm going to try to inspire you to undertake this extremely difficult task. All right? So that's the gist of this class. I'm going to explain why. The first reason is basically it's Dharma. It's the appropriate decision to make when the conditions are right, and the conditions are going to be extremely broad. I just didn't want to have to deal with that thing. Well, okay, here's my kids. Someone did this to them. It's horrible. But then I'm going to sidetrack it. Let me get the basic principles here. Are there any questions so far?
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Is acting like forgiveness on the road to forgiveness?
Is acting on the forgiveness?
For example, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Even if you're not feeling it 100%, it's still the forgiveness.
Uh-huh. Very nice question. Yeah.
Are you on the path towards?
Yeah. Forgiveness, the act is also an internal condition. It's not just an act. When you say forgiveness, right, it's not just an act, it's an embracing of a particular condition. It's the act is forswearing revenge, not wishing the person ill anymore, not tempering that resentment that one has. So thank you for that clarification. But yes.
Go ahead. Would you say the forgiveness?
It's a little sticky, forgiving yourself, yes, but, I wrote some notes on this. Why, right? The wrong done to others? Well, that's kind of not really. I forgive myself that I, it's not that. Maybe you can forgive yourself for what that wrong has done to you. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
For what one has only done to oneself. You know what I'm saying? I think that it's a little bit out of the realm of the class, what I was thinking, but I think those conditions, I really haven't thought about it. I think I'll have to think it more, but I did in the miscellaneous section of my notes that someone's going to ask about self-forgiveness. So I would think, not for all, yeah, I forgive myself, I did this to that person. But, for what you do to yourself, what that wrong has done to you, what that wrong has done to you. Let me think about that, what it has done to you. What I think this comes up with is, this is nice thinking, because generally, in saintly thought, generally thinking forgiveness is, that person has harmed me, and I'm not, I really have to get forgiveness. But this is another situation. And I think it's more appropriate. We should think what we did to others, right? We should think what we did to others. And highly spiritual people are extremely sensitive to this. Because your consciousness becomes like a glass of water that's clean, right? So little specks of dirt become apparent, right? When someone is all dirty, they don't see anything they did wrong. So it's actually an evolved state, that we should come to the state. I'll tell you a story like this. It's interesting. There was one meditator, and he was meditating, and there's a particular meditation where you meditate on these called Leela or pastimes or stories, right, that exemplify love. And it's like watching a drama, right, and it's moving your heart with these different emotions. So there was one advanced practitioner of this, and he was meditating, and then in the drama he was meditating on, there was some humor. It's a spiritual drama. I can't get into this. It's an advanced technique.
he began to laugh. Now, this was all sadhus in India, old kind of people. And one guy was crippled. So he was kind of walking by like this, and then he saw this person laugh, and he became offended. So this sage in his meditation, the meditation broke. And in this path, the bhakti or devotional path, they understood that what breaks your meditation is if you've offended someone. That's the worst thing for your spiritual life. So he said, oh my God, I've offended someone. I don't know why I offend. So he goes to his guru and his older brother named Sanatan. Right? And he says to Sanatan, offended someone, and I don't know. He said, you know what you do? He said, hold a big feast for all the saintly people, sadhu means saintly people, and then see who doesn't come. In my tradition, it's a big thing. If you make some mistake, very sensitive, even small, you really should, you know, try to, you know, get forgiveness from that. And take that position. And then they say, if the person doesn't give forgiveness, then in our tradition, one begins to chant mantras praying to God to inspire the person. You know? That's in our tradition. I'm going to do a little fun exercise now. Wait, I'll let you decide if it's fun. Okay? To help you expand the conditions where forgiveness is appropriate, I'm going to give you examples, and in your mind, tell me if you think it's right or not. Okay, because you're saying it's real hard to forgive. So now look at these people and say, nah, you shouldn't have forgiven that person. Or say, yeah, it's good. Get an exemplar and try to move in that direction. Right? So, this was during the civil rights era, and there were some civil rights workers there. It was Mississippi, and they had a young child, and they decided that their 6-year-old girl would be the one that integrates this school. So the federal matrons and federal marshals, they walked the girl in. All the people withdrew their children from the school. They stayed along the sign with tickets, and they hurled horrible racial abuses against that girl. The girl was walking in, the federal matron was escorting her. Hears her saying something. Says, what are you saying? Says, I'm praying for them. She says, well, why are you praying for them? He says, I'm praying for them. Like, why are you praying for them? He says, don't you think they need God's mercy? Do you agree? Was she right or was she a fool?
Right.
She's right. So you see, but my resentment is cherished. That I won't give up. That's good. Right? Okay, here's another one. Bill Clinton's walking with Nelson Mandela. Right? And he said, don't you still feel some, you know, resentment towards these people, what they did to you? You were in prison for 33 years. I think when he got out, Bill Clinton was there. Nelson Mandela says, he says, no. Bill Clinton says, why? He says, I want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that? You understand
that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, because that's also a concept, that it's actually... There's one quote, it really doesn't matter if the person who hurt you deserves to be forgiven. Forgiveness is a gift to yourself. You have things to do and you want to move on. That's for you. I was talking, the highest thing is God. It's correct. And when you do something that's appropriate, when you contact the universal interest, their universal interest is laws, God's laws, truly universal interest. When you contact that, it's good for everyone. That's what Dharma means. When you do the appropriate thing, it's good for everyone. It's good for yourself, it's good for others. Booker T. Washington said, I shall not allow any man to belittle my soul by making me hate him. The weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong. Anger makes you smaller, while forgiveness forces you to grow beyond what you were. Like same thing. You know, we think if you know we're angry, we can get back, but it makes us less. If you meditate on a saintly person. Is there a limit to their compassion? It's a good quality. What does compassion mean? What does mercy mean? It means when you receive mercy, what does that mean? It means you're getting something that's undeserved, isn't it? Right?
But isn't mercy kind of like a second of the beginning?
What's that?
Isn't it kind of like a piece of forgiveness?
I think it is.
It's probably
forgiveness is a more specific. Maybe I have to think about it. But what I wanted to say is point to something else and see if it helps answer your question. That we want mercy, don't we? Right? And what is mercy? We want beyond what we deserve. Isn't it? Isn't it? We're all looking for mercy. Give me some, God, give me mercy. We want a beyond what we have deserved. Right? So, now here's a meditation for you. How would you, if you were forgiven today by God and others, only to the degree that you have forgiven others, how would your life be now? See, it's going into the realm of hypocrisy. You know, sometimes we see someone, you get something they don't deserve, and we say, that's not right. But we're always praying for it ourselves. You see? Yeah.
It was still just time when
that's the question of when. I should say one more thing when it is. You have to first see if the person who you want to forgive is actually an appropriate candidate for forgiveness. And when I say an appropriate candidate for forgiveness, I wrote it down here. When I say an appropriate criteria, was he culpable, or maybe he was ignorant, maybe they were youthful? You understand? So in other words, you first have to see, is the perpetrator really a candidate? Maybe they did something wrong. You know, that's even in law. You know, are they temporarily insane? Is the situation such that they pressure them? But your question is there a case where it's not appropriate? I think it's debatable. Going back to what are the conditions are, some people want the offender to take responsibility, you know, they want your own anger to be gone. I would say that the conditions were not to forgive. I don't think so, but it's a question of when. Is there a period of time where some moral outrage is appropriate in relationship with someone else? That's the only condition I can think of. And then after some time, it's going to be morbid to go back. Maybe not immediately, you know, although some people argue for that, you know, but I think as an expression of genuine love, when someone is in relationship to you is hurt, let's give the mother some time for feeling something in relationship to her love. But mm-hmm. after some time, I think it's always appropriate. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Maybe like in the inspiration story, the child who has been praying for them, it's almost like handing it over to God before you're ready for true forgiveness. Like to say, you know, maybe you're not ready to forgive, but maybe you're ready to pray.
Yeah.
Or is that it?
Uh-huh.
So maybe the situation could be so horrendous that you're not quite ready for that step, but you might be able to jump right in. Praying for it, even if you're not ready to give it.
That would be a start. But what I would say is with that girl, my indication when hearing that story is that she had forgiven.
She was a child, too.
Yeah?
I wonder, 40 years later, how she felt about the situation. You know, it might have been... children are so much... do have so much more forgiveness. Children are so pure. And, you know, my... get to a point where
they can also be more cruel too, and I'll tell you a story about that one. What?
Yeah, you're right.
Well, at least in that particular story, if we focus on it, I'm assuming in that story that the girl has had some real deep sentiment and has evolved, had some character.
But she also had a mission.
What?
She had a mission. And her parents might have even said to her, whatever they do, you just pray. You know, whatever they say, you just pray.
We're reading into the mind.
Yeah, definitely not.
So what I would say with this particular tradition, let's say she did forgive.
Yeah.
Is it appropriate? Is it glorious?
Yeah.
But what you're saying is not so easy. But what I'm saying is, yes, being of character is not so easy. Doing the right thing is not so easy. Being peaceful and content is not so easy. But we want to take improvement and things to move towards that goal. Right? And one of the ways you do it is by really getting the right understanding first. And that's what this class is about. That's why I like questions. To get the right understanding about it. Now I'll tell you a story about children. Right? One grade school teacher, right? All the little children were just hating everybody else. It was one of those classrooms, mm-hmm. and they were ganging up, and, you know. And she got so fed up, she thought, what she do? So she said she brought in a whole basket of potatoes, and she had bags. She said, everyone in the class, go up, fill the bags with a potato for each person in the class you don't like. Mm-hmm. Write their name on it and keep the bags at your seat. So kids got it. And after a week, the potatoes started to rot. And the kids wanted to give up the potatoes. And the teacher wouldn't let them give up the potatoes until they gave up the resentment. But the point she wanted to make to them, that your hate, your resentment, going against your dharma, when you go against dharma, when you go against the appropriate actions, it only hurts yourself. Socrates in the Apology, beautiful, he's condemned to death, right? He's condemned to death by the Senate. Why? Because he's enlightening the youth. Look at the first crime. Yeah. So he's condemned to death. So he just says he's an enlightened soul, Socrates. So he came to the assembly, and he said, let me address the assembly. He gives a famous speech called the apology. And what the speech says is, he says, if you think you can harm me, you cannot harm me, you'll only harm yourself. So what does that mean? Is if you do something that is wrong, you'll only harm yourself. And even if someone does something wrong to you, but if you have the right knowledge and understanding and respond to it, they can't harm you. So people are only enabled you to harm you due to your lack of realization and knowledge after a while. That's why in a proper culture, they have things called Brahmins, not teachers, not by caste, but by quality. People are trained. Right, so they understand deeply and they can guide people and give them knowledge how to live a better life. And without that knowledge, then we be consumed by something a lot of times that actually are really well within the conditions we're in. But we don't even believe it's important. We don't even understand how much it harms us. And yoga teacher training is what? It's supposed to give you a little more of the philosophy behind the practice. The practice is couched. It has some purpose, the exercises. You could already see that. But it's couched in a greater perspective, a greater objective, which is to actually become peaceful and happy by elevating your mind according to the science of how the mind works. Okay. Okay, I'm going to discuss a few points and we'll do some exercises after we get this done. I want to discuss the law of karma. It's very important to understand in philosophy. Okay? And I also illustrate this by the hands. And it's actually one of the main reasons, the main impetuses, the main understanding, why legitimately one should forgive the wrong done to himself. And again, it doesn't mean develop a relationship. It means don't be ruled by those feelings. Drop it. Go on. And in my own life, I'm as concerned with getting forgiveness as giving forgiveness. Giving forgiveness is easy. Getting it, that's more difficult. But here it is, why you should give forgiveness. So this side of my body represents the past. Mm-hmm. This is in the past. This is the perpetrator. Right? Okay, this is perpetration. Exploitation, abuse. This is the victim, right? And this hand going here is Vishnu. Vishnu is a Sanskrit name for God, one who pervades everything, one in everything. So in Indian philosophy, Vishnu is observing this. So now forget observing the victim, he's observing the perpetrator. Now he sees that this is against the nature of the soul. What causes distress? What causes distress and suffering is when you act against nature. We are spiritual. Our nature is to be selfless and loving to God and to others. That's our nature. And only when your activities are in harmony with your nature can you be peaceful. There's an Indian science of medicine called Ayurveda. Ayurveda means the science of life. And you know what how they define disease? They define disease as a crime against nature. Why do you get sick? Because you went against nature. Is your nature to eat 5,000 calories? Is your nature, you know, whatever. You know, so you go again. Is your nature to just sit down all day and never exercise? If you go against your nature, the symptom is suffering. Suffering is not bad. It's indicating that there's something wrong so you can correct it and get to the root. So when you're exploitive, it's against your nature. It causes you suffering. So now the divine absolute reality, the divine absolute reality sees this and has a plan to correct it. So it remembers this. Now this is the future, right? Now here is the perpetrator. Now in the future, the perpetrator is going to become the victim, right? And now there's someone else that's doing the same thing he did, right? And this is something that is in this person. So now it's coming to this person. What does the person say? I don't like this. What are they not liking? They're not liking what's in them. So whenever something happens to me and someone, you know, and there's a whole range of forgiveness we can start at that's not, you know, the Holocaust. There's a whole range of forgiveness we can start at that's not the Holocaust. So what happens is that when something happens to me, I'm thinking now, we all have it. We all are it. We all have it. And what I'm thinking of is, you know, in relationship to myself, because I am trained in this tradition of understanding and knowledge. Even though, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's like sometimes a little mixed, you know, you feel a little something. When I think about it, I said, well, no. No, because it's me. What's coming to me is me. Otherwise, it wouldn't come to me. That's an Indian philosophy, Lord Krishna. And of all the Indian schools of thought, the one thing they agree on is that there's an eternal moral order, that the world is moving to teach us lessons and help us grow. And if you actually look back on the things that happened to you, if you had some knowledge and understanding how to respond properly to them, they helped you grow. So there's a question of why condemn. The person is delivering to you your elevation. They're actually carrying. But you, and here's a story of the saintly person. There's a history of India called Mahabharata. It's so popular, it's been on the number one bestseller list in India for 5,000 years. You can't believe how intriguing this book is. Anyone who reads it will become completely absorbed. In fact, they put it on a television show in India, and it was at the same time as Parliament, and they couldn't get a quorum in Parliament. No, at the whole streets, it was empty in India. Everyone's watching the show. Anyway, it was about a fratricidal war and everything, but at one particular time, there's this saintly uncle who represents wisdom, and his nephew thinks that he's siding with the other side in the fratricidal war or something, unnecessarily, after he helped his nephew. His nephew is very evil-minded. So the nephew picks up a cane and threatens to beat him if he doesn't leave, and then calls him the most hurtful names. Because this particular uncle had some illegitimate birth or something, even though he's very saintly. So this person was so saintly, he got thrown out, and then he just thought for a second, and he saw the situation. He saw this person is under illusion, right? But it's the person God has chosen to deliver the message to me. So rather than see the illusion, or within the illusion, within the ill will, I am seeing the divine in two ways, one to purify me and maybe to give me a direction. To this person, it was time to get out of that mess and time to go to someplace else. For this person delivered the message. So in terms of the law of karma, one can see things in different ways. Okay, one time I was really disturbed by some people I thought were mistreating me. And, you know, I can tell you what I said. I'm not going to know. You know, you get that kind of mood, right? So a friend of mine wanted to help me. He also understood the psychology of it. You just can't transcend things philosophically. There's an emotional element. So he gave me an exercise, and I gave you the exercise, okay? And again, this is not within the realm of, intensive psychology. I will give you a website where a friend of mine, if you want to contact, he has all information on this, and he does give seminars if you want to write him, if you feel your issue is, it's called yogaofforgiveness.com. So you could ask him if he's coming to the East Coast or something. You can use my name if you came to my seminar. Okay? So I want to express my limitations. Okay? But this is an exercise. So my friend, he did something very interesting. He combined the philosophy of my feelings, so I'll give it to you, and try to pick an issue that's not, rape, murder, keep it within the realm of some family problem, maybe a friend, but you can do it. So what you do is close your eyes, right, and I want you to meditate on that person's face, and I want you to feel what you feel for that person. Okay, let all those feelings come out, what you feel for that person. Just let it all come out. Now, what the law of karma says, keep those feelings, what the law of karma says is that you're actually the cause. So keep on meditating that person's face. Now, you're going to remove that person's face, and now you're going to put your own. Okay? And keep the feelings. Okay, you can look up. See, that's supposed to help you release it, because actually the feelings that you have can also be directed towards yourself. Because ultimately, I'm just saying yoga, they asked me to speak on yoga. This is the tradition in India. This is the understanding. And I give another seminar called The Psychology of Karma, where I show that this is actually a law. And the way I do it is, I did it here 3 years ago. You get people's birth information. I go to a very highly qualified Indian astrologer, don't know the people, then I come into the room, and I start saying, describing people's personalities, I describe things that happen in their life, and they're shocked. But how do you do it? Because that was known at birth. It proves, I think it can be proved scientifically, that there's actually a law. There's something that's moving, because how would it be known? You see, so it's actually a fact, I believe it's a fact, that what's coming to us, we have caused. That's the law of karma. And it helps us. It helps me a lot.
It's the law of cause and effect. And but sometimes we don't get the causes in this lifetime. There may be causes from past life.
Yes, yes.
But not necessarily one. Is it because that maybe multiple people may have another lifetime? And it comes back to
No. It's your own individual actions, and it's to purify yourself. Things that you've done, then you are responsible for. And it's a moral law. It's meant to bring you to some higher level of consciousness.
whatever happens to us is meant to elevate our consciousness, provided we understand how to respond appropriately to it. That's what's lacking these days, that kind of knowledge and understanding how to respond. But then you can understand, what is the message I'm learning from this? And when I'm looking back at my life and the things that happened to me that I think were difficult, and having some frame of reference and some understanding, having been in a spiritual tradition for, you know, 40 years, I can see that the growth and understanding that came from the difficulties that I faced. And now, with more knowledge, I can even respond better in the future to the things that are happening. See, in this kind of understanding, you know, ultimately we're spiritual, we're eternal, right? And the body is temporary. And the whole idea is to get to a realization. Death is the illusion of non-existence, but we suffer it. We suffer from it because we're identifying with the body, which is not us. Death is the illusion of non-existence. We're actually eternal, but we're suffering death. There's a book that a friend recommended to me called The Denial of Death by Ernest Becker. He was a psychologist, and he related how a lot of what we do, from wars of taking over countries to, you know, extending nationalism to so many things we do, to religion itself can be that way if it lacks the spirituality aspect. And that's why people become shredded, because this is my eternity. Everyone wants to be eternal. And, you know, they try to leave legacy, you know, in so many ways. And it's a reaction to this, because actually we are. Good. We're doing good. I'm trying to really, just getting back. Resentful is harmful. I gave the example of potatoes, a lot in the, they're holding. There's an example in the Mahabharata where someone's 100 sons was killed, and, you know, he wanted to kill the other people. He became so angry, and you know, and then the person, the same saint, advised him, you know, you're trying to kill people. You're trying to get back by picking up an iron rod that's burning your own hand. We carry these things. We have to give them up to purify ourselves and to go forward. Yeah.
I've heard that we ask people, for example, run my hair, if they get hurt.
Very nice definition, perfectly. It's just that you no longer elicit a response. Right. And again, it doesn't obligate you to be with a person that's mistreated with you, or, you know, but, okay. It's 10:30. You want it? I got 10. I'll tell you what. 10 more minutes, and we'll take a break. Maybe for 10 minutes, I take a nice break. Then when we get back, I'll do a particular exercise on this, which deals with free writing, which is very, very effective. And then I think what we'll do also is just break into groups of two or three, where you can talk about your own experiences. I think it's very effective. I did this before. So let's, can I just do 10 more minutes, and then we'll take that kind of break. Again, resentful is harmful. They even did scientific studies, you know. It can cause cancer, if it just gnaws at your, I've looked at people just from my own understanding of health and things like that, and seeing, you know, in Indian metaphysics, which I think is very profound,
mind and matter are made out of the same ingredients. They're just woven in a different way. So there's a real effect on mind, on your body, you know, and these deep feelings of resentment, that they cause ill health, they cause financial ruin, you know, emotional distress, so many things. I forgot where the study is, but I actually had to prepare for the class, had read a study. And here's another one. Close your eyes and keep this image in mind. How would you feel if you carried your resentment another 5 years? Another 10, 20. How do you feel if you carried it on your deathbed? My friend also told me, he said, look, give up your resentment because you'll have to come back to give that person his reaction. And then I thought, man, I don't want to ever have to go through public school again. I don't want to have to go to, you know, the, oh my God, the competition for sense gratification when you get 14 or 15. You know, go through that whole thing again, and the ignorance that you live in when you're young and how much you suffer for it. So, you know, what you keep desires, then they're going to, in this tradition, it's going to keep you in the cycle of birth and death. Here's one more meditation, and then we'll take a break. And then I think I've given enough thought and information that we can do the exercises that help you to overcome it. But here's one exercise. Either you can draw or visualize what your resentment feels like. And then write it down, or either, what does it feel like? Here's what someone said, I'm in labor, but I won't let the baby out. I feel like a boxer is punching himself. You know, another person said, I'm in prison, and the doors are open, but I won't leave. Okay, so we have about 5 more minutes. Try to just feel it and meditate what your resentment looks like. And then either draw a picture or just kind of write it. Just try to get a visual of it. And then after this, we'll take a break. And then after the break, we can share and do one more exercise and then still have time for other people. And everything is personal. You don't have to worry about sharing it if you don't want it, you know. Anybody have the time? How much break should we take? 10 minutes?
Okay, why don't we come back at in 10 minutes, okay? And is anybody still there listening to the class here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Okay, Gail, thank you. Okay?
Yeah, this is amazing seminar.
Really? Well, these are the seminars that I give, and when you give them more often, you become better at them. So, it is. I have about 20 people here, you know?
Yeah, it is very dense. I'm just riding away here.
Thank you, Gail.
Okay.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hari Bo, Maharaj. It's Shastra Das.
Okay, Shastraji. Hari Bo.
Very
I'm
nice.
Getting those dates to visit you, kind of said. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bo Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Guru
Maharaj. I heard Chaitanya Priya and that maybe Amiya or someone, I'm not sure. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brajaraja Devdasi.
Thank you, thank you. I got those crackers, thank you. They're really a lifesaver. Okay, anybody else? Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you all for coming out. I should hope to do this.